Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. F. Scott Feel. I've got with me longtime friend and co-host of the show, Dr. Lonnie Stewart. That's kind of a little inside joke that goes on in the PT world, because once you get your doctorate of physical therapy, which is a clinical doctorate, you're actually not exactly in the position where you can teach full time with a terminal degree. A lot of universities will require you to then further get another doctorate, a PhD, an EdD, a DSC, whatever it may be, because CAPTI, our governing body, wants us to have at least 50% of our faculty with terminal degrees. Seems arbitrary to me, but it's neither here nor there. We're here today to talk about defending your dissertation, defending your thesis, and Lonnie has just gone through that process. He's just completed it. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have you back. This has been a long time coming.
Scott, it's really good to be here. I'm looking forward to being more involved and being a co-host.
I've been waiting, man. Oh boy, I've been waiting. This is the moment I have been waiting for.
Boy, was I sidetracked.
Yeah, well, you know, it's amazing how a dissertation can do that to you, man.
You know, there's a comedian, Gary Gulman. I didn't really know him before Instagram, but I follow him. And he said, you know, the thing they never tell you about life is it happens every day. And which is true. And particularly
true.
When doing a PhD and life, it's and juggling it. And I'm 54. So, you know, I'm in a career. When you have a full time job and you're doing a PhD is a significant bite. And my story, which we'll get into, includes being a geriatric specialist and trying to interview older adults in the last quarter of life during a pandemic, which just didn't happen.
Obviously, you can never prepare for something like that. You know, no. Nobody could. So a wild, wild curveball in the middle of your dissertation. But I always say that I would not wish a dissertation upon my worst enemy. However, it is a necessary evil. And I get that. And yeah. I'm glad I did it. And they can't take it away from me now. So the heck with them, you know?
You know, when people talk about the benefits of doing hard things, it's really hard to conceptualize that and to be on board with that when you're in the midst of doing the hard thing. I would say there were at least a half a dozen times where I stopped in my tracks and went, what am I doing? And I'm not quite sure I want to do this anymore. And what are the pluses and minuses of just stepping out of this altogether? Now, and so I have to admit that because I think a lot of people through that.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're here to share this story today, because I was exactly the same way. You know, I ended up pushing back my dissertation probably two semesters. Just because of life in general. But, you know, pressure can either burst pipes or build diamonds, right? So, I mean, we might as well take the diamond, you know, they're both hard. So we might as well just take the diamond path, you know?
I may have burst a pipe too, but I think I got a diamond at the end, which was the reward.
Right.
And after the defense, a lot of people will tell you that it's a letdown, that it's anticlimactic. And I didn't feel that way at all. It was I was definitely planting my pole in the ground. My flag was flying, and it was a total victory lap.
Well, let's dive into it, man. Let's talk about your journey to getting to the defense.
Sure.
Because like you said, you had some major curveballs along the way. So tell us about your story, man.
It all starts with someone saying, hey, when are you going to get your PhD? And part of that was I'm a faculty member at Columbia University. So that has implications because Columbia is an R1 institution and they expect you to do research. So when I was hired, the dean of the faculty, who was dean of the medical school, we are a program of the medical school, said, you know, we expect a return on investment. So it was assumed that I was going to get a PhD and bring in some sort of NIH funding to participate in the Columbia way, even though I don't know that that's going to eventually be what I do. But on that journey, the didactic part is the learning part is actually really rewarding.
Yeah.
You're learning so much about research. And once you start diving into it, there's some really interesting stuff going on. And my particular area is health promotion and wellness. And that I learned a lot of valuable stuff.
I had a very similar experience. Loved the didactic work in my EDD, hated the dissertation process. So.
Well, here's where it depends what program you go to, I think, too. Mm-hmm. Because I was at Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah, is a hybrid program, which I think is brilliant for working professionals. It's really kind of the only way to do it.
Yep.
If you're not going to be part of a research group and sort of be ensconced in that. I did not have a committee that was predetermined. Once you're done with your didactic work and once you take your comprehensive examinations, it was time to put a proposal together for your research and go find three people at least to be on your committee, one being a representative from Rocky Mountain and two other people. So ostensibly, you'd like to have someone that might be an expert in your area of research and then someone else that might be, I don't know, sort of a statistics guru, which is kind of what I had. I had an epidemiologist who was phenomenal with the statistics and, you know, sort of really challenged me to do the right type of statistics. And then my chair was actually in my department at Columbia, which some people sort of recommend not doing that, but this worked for me because we were close. I had access to him every week.
Yeah. That's super nice. So I kind of had a similar situation. My chair was a program director at the university I was attending for the EDD, which was hybrid. I was working full time and getting my EDD. And like you said, didactic was great. Smooth sailing. Loved it. Learned a lot about how to learn and how to teach to that learning, which I needed. I didn't know that rote memorization was not learning. So that was good for me. Learned a lot about research. Fortunate now that I'm not at an R1 university, so research isn't a top priority. We still need to do it,
right.
And I'm not a huge fan, but I'll do it. I'll do my best. I'll learn. I'll try. Yeah. I do think, and this is just my little quick soapbox, that there needs to be more educational research because that's the foundation and basis of what we do, teaching, whether it be physical therapy or any other subject. We have to know how to teach. So
great.
I'm a big fan of educational research, but that's neither here nor there. So picking your chair, picking your committee, it can be predetermined. Like you said, you can have to go out and seek them out. There's a lot of different options there, but I cannot stress enough how important it is to pick a good chair. And just because they're like a foremost expert or like, you know, the know-it-all or the guru in that thing, that may not necessarily be the way to go because they're
Agreed.
So busy. They're such an expert. They're being pulled in a million directions.
Right.
A lot of times those chairs don't kind of have time for you. So you got to be very careful and diligent about who you pick for your committee and why.
That's
and like
right.
you said,
so-
piecing it together is a great way to go about it with finding people's strengths and having them on your committee.
If your committee isn't pre-built, you want to find a mentor, someone who can really help push you through the process and someone that you, I mean, if you have the ability to do it, or if it's that type of program, someone that you can see yourself sitting down with each week to go over progress and get advice and be able to take feedback from this person in a receptive way.
So you get your committee together, you're all ready to go, and you've got this proposal, this idea that you're going to pursue.
Yeah, so now you've got to float this proposal to these three people and have that approved. The epidemiologist on my committee had some questions about the statistics I was going to do, and so we kind of went back and forth, but eventually got the proposal approved in, I'm going to say this was, and the timeline is important, it was October of 2019. And so after that, you know, you can get IRB approval prior to that. That was one recommendation of my chair. I didn't actually have that done, but I was working through it, getting those things developed. And pretty soon afterward, got IRB approval to begin data collection, which really was interviewing people one-on-one. I was entering answers into Qualtrics for people. Wow. But the rationale for doing a one-on-one interview was to get complete responses.
Yeah.
And that was very successful for my first 11 participants, many of whom were sort of like my neighbors in New York City who were over the age of 75. And then in March 2020, we became the epicenter of the COVID epidemic, pandemic. And then Columbia Research paused all research that didn't have a benefit to participants.
Wow.
An immediate benefit to participants. So a big hold was put on. At that time, everybody was talking about, well, we'll wait 2 weeks and then go from there.
Yeah.
That wasn't
2 weeks, 2 years, whatever, you know, whatever's clever.
So here's where it, when you hit a bump like that on the road, you've got two choices. You stay the course or you pivot. And I had just defended the proposal. So I was really staunch in saying, I want to stay the course.
Yeah.
Whereas I know other programs sort of brought their students in and said, listen, if you want to get this done, we better change the question a bit and change the statistics and to get you through. I didn't. Looking back on that, you know, I'm not sure I would have done it. I'm not sure I would have done it differently. I just stayed the course, for better or for worse. So I didn't get.
Let me ask this out of curiosity: what was the end you were shooting for doing one-on-one interviews? Just out of curiosity.
So power analysis suggested I needed 100 people.
Oh my goodness!
I was 11.
Holy cow!
Yeah, right. So we start up basically the following March, let's say.
Yeah.
And I get to 51 in the next couple months, and my chair says, "Let's pull the cord."
Oh no.
Yeah. So he said, you've got the bare minimum to say something. So let's stop it now because we got to get through this.
Yeah.
It was good advice because there was still a lot to be done.
Yeah.
What I've come to understand now to anybody that's about to go through the PhD process or is in the middle of it now and is in the weeds is that it's really an exercise on explaining your actions and what you did and just admitting what those limitations are and whether you can say with any degree of certainty the things that you're presenting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is part of the exercise. And that's what I learned. It's like, listen, God bless the researchers because nothing goes right.
Yeah.
And so how did you pivot? What are the decisions you made? And what can you say from the things that you pulled in?
Yeah. And there's a section in the dissertation for limitations. Yeah, just be exactly. open and honest about it. Be like, hey, there was a pandemic, did the best I could.
And
what are you going to do? You know,
but you know what, when you do a post hoc power analysis and some of the things that I found were actually okay. And then a bunch of the other things were, you know what, it's not that powerful. So, we have to be suspicious about those findings.
Sure. And I cannot tell you how much research I've read where the final line or two is more research is needed. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Guess all what? That's always going to happen. That's the rest of our lives for eternity. More research will be needed, but we're doing the best we can, you know, with what we got right now.
Exactly. And a lot of that does come down to funding. Like, do you have resources that I could have overcome certain hurdles?
Yeah. And the cool part, again, about educational research, it's not that expensive, but it's man expensive. It's labor intensive. It's hours.
Hands
so
on,
it's time.
Yes, absolutely. You know?
So tell us a little bit about the title of your study and you know how it all kind of came together.
Sure. Well, the short title for my study was Late Life in New York, the Late Life in New York study. So I was taking a look at older adults who were in the last in life, so 75 years old or older, who are aging in place in New York City. And I chose a certain New York City Council district. The thought was that we take a look at your financial well-being, your life space, like the range of movement that you have in the past month, the size of your social network, your friends and family, your ability to perform your instrumental activities of daily living. It's always the fifth one that I forget. You know, I've only been doing this 8 years. your cognition. Yeah. We did a mini cog on everybody.
That's funny. You forget the cognition piece. Social determinants
and how does that
of health.
How does that explain your physical and mental quality of life? We were able to do that. The interesting thing is Scott, I would say when it comes time to defend the work, you're now put in the position to take the years of work that you've been doing and put it in a 40-minute, 45-minute presentation. And that was a lot of work to do.
Yeah. You know, and again, it's publishing a paper, presenting at a conference, defending your thesis or your dissertation, like the editing that has to go on to cut things down to this like little bite size.
Things. You're constantly scaling things.
It's ridiculous.
It's big, it's massive, and then it's small again.
Yeah.
Like going back and forth each time, macro, micro.
Yeah. And I get car sick, you know, so that could explain why I had such a bumpy ride on my dissertation. It's in, it's out, right? It's large, it's small. It's just.
And then you have to become facile with scaling it up and scaling it down.
Yeah.
What's the minutia? What are the little things? And then what's the big picture?
Yeah. So the interesting thing for me was I was an English major right before I was a PT. So I just thought I'd be able to write because I could write well, you know, I was like, this will be a breeze, you know, I can write. And early on in my dissertation, it turns out that actually hurt me because I did not know that scientific writing was not big and bold and flowery and wordy, right? It wants short, precise, concise, to the point.
Yeah.
And so I had to relearn how to read and write again almost.
And
it
not
was
get
like
yourself
a whole new
into
language.
Trouble and self-aggrandize and be restrained. Sure.
It
absolutely.
Was wild. But now at the end, I feel like it did kind of help me a little bit because I was pretty decent at being able to edit things down and squeeze them down into what they were looking for.
I would say that's part of the process too. Definitely your writing. So it helps to be a good writer prior. I think those that are not struggle. I was an art history major, so I was, you know, that did not help me become a physical therapist, but I was writing a lot and descriptive writing. Yeah.
Yep.
So that definitely helped.
Tell me a little bit about just resources in general that you use to get across the finish line that you felt helpful. If, you know, people on a journey, they're about to do a PhD, considering it, or in the weeds, what are some great resources that you use to get across the finish line?
I did have some interesting resources and some important resources. One, I'm going to say that if you are asked to take a writing course, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's really important. And if you can be open to changing how and being critical about how you're doing your writing, it's really important to do that. And you'll find that as you go through the initial struggles of changing how you write, it really begins to free you up and you become much more adept at conveying information well. We've all read those articles that you think, I don't know what they're saying in this article. Mm-hmm. I know it's English, but I'm really not quite sure. There was also a book called, I think, Your Dissertation Journey, or The Dissertation Journey. Yes, exactly. And who wrote that? By Carol Roberts. It's good to have in your back pocket what's going to be expected of you coming up. It's good to have some sort of idea of what the whole process looks like, because at each stage of the process is new. You figure it out kind of on the fly, but it's great to have a resource about how in general dissertations go and sort of what the expectations will be and what, because when you get done with all of your data collection is really fun. Now you're going to do a discussion and the discussion is probably the most important part of the whole thing. And it's great to get some initial ideas about how to handle all of that information and begin saying something about it. And also to then understand what's going to happen for the defense. I'm sure each defense is a little bit different and what's expected, but to have a handle on what's coming up, and once you do the defense, what to expect after that, meaning my committee, I think I sat for an hour answering questions with them. I didn't really expect that. Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I took questions from people that were invited. Mm-hmm. Everybody left. And then I sat with them for about an hour discussing different aspects of the dissertation. I didn't think it was going to be that long.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's different for everybody. I'll tell you a little bit about my experience in a bit, but one of the things that, I love about this is, it's like what to expect when you're expecting that book, but for dissertations, you know, because again, you don't know. And that's why, again, that's why I put together this podcast. And that's why Brandon and I sat together and started this thing, because we're not experts. We don't know.
Right.
I didn't even think I was going to go into education. And now here I am doing it full time. Right. So I wish this stuff existed. And luckily now it kind of does, right? The internet's made things great. Podcasts have made things great. Books have made things. There's so much information out there. It's nice to have that guide of what to expect, because you just don't know. And again, it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody's journey is going to be different. The programs are going to be different. But at the end of the day, it still looks like a dissertation, right? And then you've got to go and put it together and then defend it, right? So let's talk about that process now, the actual defense, right? Like you put this all together, you're ready to go, you've edited it down, you've got a 40-minute presentation or so. What happens? Tell us
that
about
you're working on up to the last minute.
Right. Yep. I did the night before for sure.
Yep. And then what happens?
You walk in and step up to the bat.
Yeah, expect that you might have people zooming in. Mm-hmm. Cause that's a thing now. Rocky Mountain, you know, it was an open invitation to everybody to join and watch. Here's a little pro trick that I did without knowing it was a pro trick. I have students who are in a research practicum. So I'm meant to help if they're interested in research, I'm helping them come up with an idea and flesh it out and present it. And so they could use some of my data to say something that maybe I wanted to look into further. Two of them were free to come to the defense. And so I had them managing the Zoom so that one, I could focus on the notes on my screen because I didn't need my notes for this.
Yeah.
I could probably fly solo, but I needed just some backup. And then I didn't have to worry about all the screen issues with Zoom and seeing people on it and who's coming in, going out.
Yeah.
I was totally removed from that. So I had someone else deal with that. You need to make sure the technology is right. Like I went into the room where I was going to do this presentation a couple of times, make sure I could set up the technology with Zoom, with presenter mode, with PowerPoint, and have it go on the screen correctly. That was a whole thing. That took me like 45 minutes to figure it out. And so I did it twice. So the day of, I could just put it together. In fact, I even changed the room, Scott. I had reserved a room in this really bright building and it was so bright that you couldn't see the screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I got to change this.
Yep.
So I changed the room. Like that's half of it.
Yeah. Prep work. Preparation.
Once you have that stuff going for you, then you can present. I had my chair introduced everybody and I immediately right up front, I thanked the people that were involved with the study. And acknowledged the funding that I had and got all that stuff done out of the way, all the thank yous. And then boom, we're off to the races.
Yeah.
Here's my study and went through it.
Yeah. One of the biggest, best tips that I got before going into my dissertation defense was to remember that you are the expert on that topic in that room on that day. Even if your chair or somebody is knowledgeable in the topic and they know that, you know, really well, they might know a lot of the literature and the research, but you're the only one who went and did the work and that study. Right. So you are the expert. You're there to show your knowledge and expertise. And then, you're going to get questions. You're going to get, you know, people trying to, you know, take a look at things and analyze things further and poke at it and you know. You may have some people trying to poke holes in it, right? And really trying to be sticklers. And that may be a thing. But for the most part, the thing that gave me confidence was, you know, knowing that I know this stuff back and forth. Yeah. I did all the work. I'm just going to tell them what I know and what I was able to show through my study. You know,
I'll tell you what, my chair was very helpful. He said, at this point in the presentation, I think you should acknowledge the amount of work that the epidemiologist did with you on like putting together this table.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of brilliant because I did spend a lot of time with this person going back and forth to get it right. Because you know what? SPSS wasn't doing the thing that I was being asked to do.
Yeah.
And I was racking my brain how to do that. And nobody knew how to do it. And I needed to use a different statistical package to do this, to do what was being asked.
Wild.
That was a little trick that I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I should say, and I just want to acknowledge, you know, my committee really working with me on this to flesh out this idea. And then knowing your audience, really walking people through things, also letting them know that you're a human being. There was one point in my the presentation where I said, listen, I live in New York City. I can walk a block. I walk around the corner and I can get a bagel. And, you know, sometimes in New York City, that's all you need. A bagel is everything.
True.
But if I'm in Connecticut, I got to drive 15 minutes to get a bagel. Like, that's a major difference in having a life space that could be really small and get everything that you need and be able to have a good quality of life. Or I got to be able to drive someplace, you know, 20, 30 minutes away to get things that I need.
Yeah.
So people laughed. It was a light piece of humor. You need to break things down for people, make it human, make it relevant. And then also, I was really taking a lot of words off of my slides and replacing them with pictures.
Yeah.
A lot of pictures. Huge. And one of the brilliant things that I think my chair helped me to do was during my results, I would have a slide that said, takeaway number one. This is what I want you to take away from this.
Yeah.
Takeaway number two and takeaway number three. That's here was big. This result. This is the takeaway. Here's the next result. This is the takeaway. And then the third one, here's the takeaway.
Yeah. So I tell my students.
I think I sort of re-emphasized the results maybe three or four times before the whole thing was.
Yeah. Over. Yeah. And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show. I tell my students all the time, you've got too many words on this slide. Yes. It's just words. Just take the bullet point to remind you what you're going to talk about, and then a picture to represent what you're trying to show. Storytelling, because again, that's how we learn. And there's going to be people on that committee or on that in that room that have no idea what your topic is or what you're talking about. You have to be able to be clear and concise enough so that anybody, even not in your field of study, can understand what you tried to show and how you tried to show it.
It took me about a month to get there. Too. So working on that, like at first it was all words.
Yeah.
Then it was some pictures. Then it was mostly pictures. And by that time I had the story down because you're really storytelling.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. How many times do you think you practiced the presentation?
Oh, you know what? I practiced in sections and that, I think that was really helpful.
Yeah.
And then the day before and the morning of, I went through it front to back. Maybe four or five times, where I realized the places where I was having difficulty and the places where I could probably do a little side story and get away with it time-wise.
Yeah.
I had to really constrain myself because, you know, I'm a talker.
Yep.
And so I had to really just stay to the point.
Yeah.
And then acknowledge the areas where I could tell a little story to make it relevant.
Yeah. Obviously, again, being from New York, I was involved in theater and student government and sports. And, you know, we talk a lot. We use our hands. We get animated. You know, if you don't rein me in sometimes, it's going to go. We're going to go down some rabbit holes, you know.
That's
so
right.
That was very, very key for me. The weird thing. So here was my experience real quick. I'll just kind of interject with my experience. My dissertation was done from my home because it was online. All my chair and everybody was kind of invited, same thing virtually. Yep. But my chair and the two or three people on my committee were all over the country. So we had to do it, you know, via Zoom. It was pre-pandemic. So it was 2018. My wife took the kids out for dinner and ice cream to give me 2 hours worth of time to just be alone in the house in the only room that had like good lighting and good internet, which happened to be my son's, like, you know, baby crib area, you know, so I got the crib kind of off to the side. I'm trying to get the computer so that they can't see like all the baby stuff and mobile and stuff, you know. It was wild, man. And like you said, like When I finished, I was wiped. I was mentally, yes, physically drained. And my wife came home. She's like, you know, how'd it go? I'm like, great. I passed like the minor revisions, which is to be expected.
Right.
She's like, well, do you want to go celebrate? And I was like, I don't think I can. I honestly want to just lay on the floor for an hour and you know, let the kids crawl on me, whatever they got to do, but I'm out. I'm spent.
I made a mistake. After the hour with my committee, I walked downstairs while they were going to discuss what I needed to do. And my support group was down there and they were cheering. And I guess the look on my face, like I had not decompressed from the hour of questions because I was pretty exhausted from that. And they're like, what's wrong? And I was like, you know what? I should have taken a 5-minute walk by myself just to blow off some steam.
Right. Clear your head, breathe. Yeah,
absolutely. But then someone had a bottle of champagne. So once the cork popped, that changed everything right there. Yeah. It was good.
A little champagne will fix everything, right? You go from champagne problems, right? And the Taylor Swift jam to champagne celebration. And it's like you won the World Series. So let's talk about this then. I love the fact that this is so fresh for you. Like it's literally like just happened yesterday.
I'm finishing my revisions right now. Yeah,
I love it. So sorry to take time away from that. However, no. You'll be fine. Everybody should expect revisions. It's just, I've never heard of anybody changed immediately
after that. I got to tell you, I'm in such a better place.
Yeah. Well, and again, right, I got to see you fortunately at ELC. And again, you did. You had a glow about you. You looked like a completely different human from the last time I saw you at CSM when it was like just tense and stress and like, you know,
yeah,
I'm in the middle of this thing and I can't not think about this thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, these deadlines and
deadlines
that I'm missing.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit then about your highest high and your lowest low when it comes to defending your dissertation.
Highest high and the lowest low.
Or along the process to getting there, because again, it is a process.
I was going to say, just before defending, let's say, you're going through several different drafts of your dissertation. I think after the first draft, I was asked to do another series of statistics and to also identify, just for the statistic wonks out there, some effect modification and also confounding. It was a group of statistics that I didn't anticipate doing. It was a group of statistics that I never specified that I would do up front. I think in retrospect, yes, important to do, to demonstrate that one, I knew how to do it and that I did my due diligence in that area. But I had a little downward spiral there because it was a lot of work to do. And I thought I was basically done. And boy, was I not. And I think when you start doing the revisions on your dissertation, expect that there will be a sort of second birth of something new. You may have to do an extra set of work to sort of really flesh out ideas statistically. And I think it was wise, it was important, but I was not ready to accept that at that moment. And I can't say that I took it too well. Yeah. So, but by that point, if you're the bear that's going over the mountain and you see another mountain, I think at that point, I felt like the final climb, the final ascent was a sheer cliff.
Yeah.
And I had crampons on and there was ice and I was using ice picks. Like I was using everything to just get up that mountain. And in the end, I think I came out with a much stronger product, but I was not happy.
No, you feel like they're moving the end zone, the goalpost.
Exactly.
On you.
It's like, the goalpost was.
I was just about done. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So I think that's to be expected sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would say the highest high was getting the defense done. I have a feeling, Scott, that when people have a study where they don't need to do that extra work, perhaps like it was really well-defined and you met your aims and you did the statistics for those aims and you don't need to do anything more. I think maybe it is a letdown.
Yeah.
But because the climb at the very end for me was really steep and challenging intellectually and created a lot of self-doubt, that by the time I got after the actual defense, a whole new door had opened on life for me, quite honestly.
We're hitting all sorts of pop culture references here, but it's like Miley Cyrus said, it's the climb, right? It's the journey. Yeah. I love that analogy because it really is the hard work and the climb that you take to get there. And then I almost likened it to like the Olympics where you train and train and train for 4 years for like a 30 second event and then you're done. Whether you win or lose, whatever, you maybe a medal. And now what? Like your whole identity is like changed drastically because that 30 second event is over.
Yeah.
And you just put 4 years of work into it.
I guess that's where the letdown could be, right? That's definitely could be the letdown.
Yeah.
But for me, I felt like I was just put on a different plateau. And so I don't feel let down at all. I feel like I've just entered finally, you know, in the second half of my life, entered into a new arena where I can function in a different way and be more relaxed about it. And so, and also help other students and be more helpful to people. And be in a much better state of mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, like you said, as soon as it was over, I was wiped. I was drained. I was out of it. But that next day or two, I did walk around like, you know, on clouds. Like I just felt like I could have my life back. I didn't read a book. I didn't read a book that I wanted to read for like 2.5-3 years.
And I read, weekends?
I read nothing but articles, journal articles. I read textbooks and that was it. And I was an English major. I used to love to read, you know, and that just went out the window. That wasn't a thing for 3 years of my life, you know? And so it really did feel like I got my life back. Like I was, you know, and at the end of the day, it's an accomplishment, man. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they can't take it away from you, you know?
I don't want people to think that like I'm some sort of role model for them, but you know, mental health is a real issue during this, and also taking care of yourself. And I really got stuck. I got stuck in not taking care of myself only working on the, you know, and just nose to the grindstone. Yep. It wasn't healthy.
No.
Looking back on it, I have learned a lot and I think it was worth it. But boy, if you had asked me in the moment, I was like, please don't ask me about my dissertation.
Right. Yeah. And I'll apologize because I did that several times and I know better. I've been there. Right. I've done that. The last thing somebody in a dissertation wants to hear is how's the dissertation going? When are you going to be done?
What's your topic?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm nauseous when I talk about it. Just leave me alone. I promise we're not bitter people. Like, you know, Lonnie's one of the best human beings I've ever met. So he's not a bitter old man.
You know, but, I really enjoy figuring problems out.
Yeah.
And so very often with my research practicum students, I don't know the answer. So we figure it out together. And that's the joy in education, I feel.
1,000%. I mean, for me, again, very entrepreneurial minded, right? Yeah. You just figure it out. I don't know a lot of the answers. I just don't. And I'm okay with that because I know at the end of the day, I'm going to figure it out. May not be easy. I may not like it. I may not enjoy it, but I'll be better for it on the other end when I do figure it out. Well, Lonnie, what's one bit of advice that you would give to somebody that's about to go into their dissertation, you know, defense? Like what's a parting moment or a gift or a bit of advice you'd like to give to the audience out there that may be dealing with a dissertation defense or an upcoming defense?
Whenever you're dealing with, well, I'm going to say overwhelming task or a really challenging task, it's really just important to chip away at parts of it. Get up, walk away, come back, chip away at another part of it, get up, go do something meaningful, come back, chip away. You're just constantly chipping away at things and refining. And I think people can get very defensive in the refinement process. And you have to begin getting comfortable in, okay, this is a rough piece of work. And I'm going to continue refining. There was a fear of mine that I wasn't going to be ready to finally present it when meet that deadline. It's funny. I've always met the deadline. I've always gotten there. I've always worried about it probably too much.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, it's time to stop worrying about this and just get to the work of getting it done.
Yep. Land the damn plane.
Yes. You know? Just land the plane.
Yep.
Exactly.
I feel like, and it's interesting too, because I tell people that as well, like, even if it's like, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 words in a sitting, that's great. Because if you stack enough wins, even if it's paragraph by paragraph, eventually you end up with a nice polished product.
Even if it's just figuring out how this one article, what this one article is saying and how it fits and writing a sentence about that. I mean, because it informs how you're going to relay that information later. It's much bigger than the sentence. It informs, it gives you the background to be able to say something with some strength.
so many times, like I see people, you know, start the process and you see people go ABD, right? All but dissertation. And it's like, why did you start? You know, I know why you started, or I have an idea of why you started. It made sense. It looked sexy. It was, you know, something you wanted to do. But then you got to finish it. You got to bring it across the finish line. And again,
I mentioned the bear that went over the mountain.
Yeah.
What did he see? He saw another mountain. Well, each mountain got bigger and bigger. And there's a point where you look back at the mountains that you've done and you say, I just can't stop now.
Yeah.
Like I've come this far.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to sit for a minute and think about this. gather myself, have a snack, and then go attack that mountain.
Exactly.
Because now it's about my self-worth in many ways. Like, am I going to quit, or am I going to stick to it and get this done? And I'm going to come out kind of banged up and bruised, but I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
And again, this probably says more about me than other people who are listening about this, but I know other people who go through this and struggle with their self-worth, and it's a real thing, and have difficulty managing real life while doing this, right? I'm not a grad student. I am a grad student, but I have a full-time job,
right?
And I have all those demands, and
yeah,
I've got two kids in college, and
yep,
you know, all that stuff. And like when the boiler doesn't work, then that derails everything. So
yeah,
you have to breathe and just keep moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a lot of great takeaway points there that you said, like when the bear is going over the mountains and stuff, you have to kind of pause a little bit and look back at those mountains that you did accomplish
back
and celebrate them a little bit.
Yes.
Not a lot. You don't have to, you know, wallow in how great you are and, you know, but just, you know, pat yourself on the back and say, hey, man, that was a wild ride. I got over it. I finished it. That's cool.
Absolutely.
All right, man, on to the next one. Let's get back at it, right?
I think my family celebrated each of those milestones a little bit more than I did, because
of
I
course
was just exhausted and like,
yeah,
wow, okay, well, I finally got through that.
No, that's great advice. And I think, you know, I hope people really, you know, take this, because you don't come this far just to come this far.
Right.
A lot of, honestly, it's every single room I go into, I'm never the smartest guy in the room, and I'm okay with that. But I'll tell you what, grit and tenacity and stick-to-itiveness, that's the
yes
only thing that got me through my dissertation, that got me through
yes
my DPT, my MPTE, all
yeah
that stuff. I didn't pass the first time, right? It took me two extra semesters, like all these things. But I'll tell you what, I'll get back up and I'll try again. I'll keep trying.
Yeah.
And that's all it is.
Absolutely.
The dissertation process for me just came down to tenacity and just sticking to it. Just keep getting back up and expect that you're going to have challenges. Expect that they're going to have revisions. If you expect it and you know coming at it, it's still a little hard to take. It's a hard pill to swallow sometimes,
mm-hmm,
especially like you said, when they give you a whole new change and challenge that you weren't expecting. But if you just expect that it's going to be hard, there's going to be challenges, and you should expect to have to adapt and change and roll with it and learn to get better and finish this thing.
Yeah.
Eventually you're going to have that polished product to hand in and present, you know, and defend.
Afterward, having gone through the whole process, you're going to have some skills that you never had in the
beginning. Exactly. Skill stacking.
And in fact,
I love it.
The defense developed another set of skills. I began telling a story, and I didn't tell people all this extra stuff that we had to do because this was found or that was found. My chair said, nobody cares about that. So fit it into the story that you planned for this.
Yeah.
I said, nobody needs to know.
Yeah.
Okay. And it actually made sense after that. I was like, you can do that? You said, oh yeah.
Yeah. It's your narrative
that you had trouble with multicollinearity and you had to do these extra statistics.
Yeah.
We
took a look at this because
exactly
why not?
You looked at this from a different direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got one last question then about the defense. So,
okay,
you know, you have this chair, right? You have a committee, you have people there. They ask some questions, maybe some, you know, casual stuff about, hey, I just don't know much about this. Tell me about this.
Yeah.
And then you go into that extra hour of questioning.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the firing squad. What's that like?
So that's now more technical. So now we're getting down to the minutiae again. Instead of sort of like big picture, now it's about how was this measure responsiveness, and does the past literature sort of show it as responsive? What other measure do you think you could have used that might have been better? Like, did you think of that? And if you're designing a new study, what elements would you include into that? So here, this is a funny, part, I'm not sure if it's funny. I would say one of the last questions was, okay, if you're developing a predictive study for something, what are the elements that you're going to include in it? And it, for some reason, I think the fatigue had just really set in, and I had, and maybe it was also, I don't think I quite understood the question. I should have asked to clarify. There were so many elements in the end to my study that to pick from those elements, which ones I would use at that time that question was asked was a difficult question for me. Yeah. I had difficulty answering it. And I look back and I think I was kind of laughing because I think I was just exhausted.
Yeah.
So what happened at that point was the committee sort of stepped in for me. They were like, okay, well, let's think about this. Let's work it out.
Yeah.
So it wasn't my greatest moment, but the question with just the committee, expect them to go through the dissertation, said, you said this here, you know, can you propose some reasons why men and women have different life space scores? This is something that's been found in the literature and nobody's really explained it.
Yeah.
But except what I did find is that there are probably some physiological differences and reasons for that.
Yeah.
I can't go in that now, but I did propose some different things. So it's really about, those questions are really about expanding on your knowledge rather than just focusing on what you presented.
Yeah.
So how would you do things in the future? How would you design something different? Can you propose some reasons for this finding? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, well, Lonnie, I could talk to you endlessly on this stuff, man. I love it. I love your journey.
I hope it was helpful. I hope to the listeners that it's helpful in some way.
Well, I think if anything, people just need to realize that everybody's journey is going to be different for sure. Yeah. Everybody's got a story. You know, their dissertation experience is going to be, you know, theirs, and it's going to be wild. But at the very least, it shows that, like you said, we are human. Like, there's a lot that goes into this stuff. And I know for sure I didn't sleep. I was up early. I was up late. I was, you know, when I was doing my dissertation, I was working full time as a clinician. I had two small kids. I don't even know how I got through it. If it wasn't for my wife, I don't think I would have survived.
Absolutely.
You know,
your support group really comes in.
Yeah. Huge. And so, you know, I think people just need to realize all that goes into the process and how you get to the end and you defend. And then, like you said, you get a new lease on life. It seems like everything's like, all right, I'm done. Now what? Like, what's my next thing to conquer? You know, like I felt literally like Superman, like I was invincible after that. Like, what's next? Bring it on. I'm ready. You know, I needed a few days, but after that, I was ready to do it again. Well, Lonnie, as you know, we ask all of our guests this one final question. And that question is, if you could change one aspect of higher education, whether it be DPT or otherwise, what aspect would you change and how would you change it?
Always a great question. The big question, what would I change? I think it would be, and let's stay on point here, integrating these PhD requirements or PhD programs in the workplace in some form. I really appreciated the format from Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions. I just wish that somehow the processes to get these terminal degrees done and the requirements can be somehow facilitated in our own workplaces to get it done. I'm not sure that's the best answer. I just wished for a more local and applicable experience, which might have been an additional ounce of support that I needed to really get through those rough times.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, there's a couple of programs out there now that have kind of a DPT to PhD bridge.
Hmm.
They're working towards that. There's not many of them for sure. We're going to need some sort of answer coming up here as many faculty start retiring, and we're going to need more faculty to fill all these new programs that are starting. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is there. I do like the idea of some sort of, you know, bridge program or something that can help or support terminal degrees more for PTs, because it's like asking them to pay even more money on top of what they already paid. And it's like, the ROI is not great right now in the, you know, debt to income ratio for DPTs. So I don't know. I think we're still trying to figure that out. I'm hoping, you know, that, you know, there's some answers in sight and some people are starting to think through this, you know, current needs assessment. Obviously, being, you know, a geriatric specialist type myself, I enjoy the fact that you, you know, took a look at the geriatric world and did something that was, you know, important to you and that you could kind of have real world and applicable, you know, information about, because you know, to me, that's what matters. Do the research on something you find interesting and that's going to solve a problem for the world.
Yep.
But you have to have an interest in it, because if not, when it does get tough, it's going to be, you know, pretty easy to just cut and bail and be like, I don't want to do this anymore. Right. You got to be passionate about it. You got to love what you do. There has to be a why behind your question and why you're pursuing it. So like I said, Lonnie, I appreciate your time, man. One of my favorite human beings on this planet. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people reach out to you and find you if they just have follow-up questions or they want to see what you're up to these days?
Yeah, you know, they can email me. I'm at ms, as in Malin Stewart, 2952 at cumc.columbia.edu. That's Columbia University Medical Center. So cumc.columbia.edu, ms2952.
Excellent. We'll put the link in the show notes there so it's easy for people to find. Lonnie, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing some of your episodes in the near future and hearing your interviews. So we're excited to have you, man.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, I hope that episode was entertaining as much as it was informational and educational. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our past episodes, we ask you to please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. And please share out the episodes to those who you feel may be able to benefit from them. We also urge you to follow us on all social media platforms at HET Podcast and let us know what topics or experts you would like to hear from in future episodes. And just as a reminder, none of the information on today's show should be considered medical advice. It's simply infotainment or edutainment to help educate our audience. For medical advice, we always advise you to reach out to your preferred medical professionals, and we'll see you on the next show.